Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But very wise, so wise was he. The greatest thing you'll ever learn is to love and be loved in return.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4. I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah
And I want us. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring with the harmony. Oh, liberty. Let our rejoice and rise high. Burning the loud as the Georgia.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sang.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Turn my headphones up. Louder.
Hello, 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 white America, assassinate my character. Money matrimony, yeah, they tryna break the marriage up. Who gon' act phony, or who gon' try to embarrass ya? I'ma need a day off, I think I called Ferris up.
Mueller had a Mueller, but I switched it for a Mille, cause I'm richer. And prior to this shit was moving freebie.
Had a conference with the DJ,
yeah.
Puerto Rico 3 days.
Polly with the PDs, now they got that shit on replay.
Sorry I'm in pajamas, but I just get off the PJ. And last party we had, they shut down Privé.
Ain't that where they heat play?
Yeah.
Niggas take ballers these days.
Yeah. Ain't that like LeBron James?
Ain't that just like D-Wade? Wait.
What you need? 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 crying for they mommy back. Tell me that your daddy is. Tell them I just want my rack.
Racks on racks on rag. Racks. Made backs on backs on backs on backs on backs.
Who in that?
Oh shit, it's just blacks on blacks on blacks. 100 stacks.
How you kidding?
Nigga laying raps on tracks.
I wish I could give you the feeling. I'm planking on the million. I'm riding through your hood. You can bank, I ain't got no ceiling.
Made a left on Ocean Ave.
Right.
We in bed side.
Made a right on 79th. I'm coming down South Shore Drive.
I was made in Chi-Town.
Brooklyn to our top.
Retro. super fly. I'm ballin' like the rain, I swear it should be televised. Passport, just left a mile high. I'm counting money in the left, couple miles high. White boy, screaming Mazda tie. We poppin' bottles just to rock them on that bitty eye. Dream team, that's what I call my pants. Just call me Kobe, ho, I'm ballin' through the fiscal year. Shout like a chandelier. Yo, I see your model finer than my wristwear. Retro, number five. I'm Michael Jordan. It's game time. I'm super fly. I'm from the skyline. I'm Michael Jordan. It's game time. I'm ballin' out. I'm ballin' out.
Girls are getting naughty. I'm ball so hard, they're like, oh my god, and I'm yelling back like I'm sorry. They might fall out when I style out, and I cross them over at the foul line. I'm stopping pop and get rid of hoes. I ain't trying to be wasting time, and that clock don't keep on ticking. And I'm out here getting my chicken, and I'm on the floor, and I'ma get some more. When them niggas riding them benches, I'm Michael Jordan when it's game time. Or maybe I'm more like AI, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. Either way, I'ma stay fly. I'm high above competition. Above the rim, I'm not missing. I'm Michael Jordan ballin'. Y'all niggas are Scottie Pippen.
Retro, number five. I'm Michael Jordan. It's game time. I'm super fly. I'm from the skyline. I'm Michael Jordan.
Retro game time. Nate Robinson, yo, it's like Jordan out here. I told people the Bulls is going to shock Miami. I was like, you know, they'll come out, win the first game. Nate Robinson is going to go on fire. But, Nate, watch out. The next game, Nate, they're going to beat you up.
Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. The will to win. And the Chicago Bulls.
TW, the will to win. That's enough of that. Yeah, we got a late start today because I was trying to get the little game in. And I got the game in. I don't think the Bulls are going to win it all, but I know they're going to pull two games out this little series. But, you know, that's how it is. How y'all doing today? It's open mic Monday. But today I'm going to close the mic up and do a little salute to Asada Shakur. Now, who is this lady? She's the first woman on the most wanted list for the FBI. Why is that? We're going to dig into that, see who this lady is and what she's all about and why it's such a big spook. Right now, she's over there in Cuba. She got political asylum for a crime that she did in New Jersey. And Castro granted her political asylum. Now, people, I'm getting my information is that the only reason they're messing with her now because of the little spook that Jay-Z and Beyonce went and did over there in Cuba about bucking the president. By saying, fuck you, Obama, we run this town tonight. You ain't nobody. By going over to Cuba and starting a little international, so-called international incident. So what happens now is that the government needs a fall guy because they didn't get Jay-Z. So let's pick on Asada Shakur. Ain't that chick a terrorist? Ain't she like Bill Ayers? Ain't she blowing up some things? So before I give an impression on my opinion on who she is, let's give... Let's see how history judges her, and let's see how things will go. So let me just do this little presentation to who is Asada Shakur.
In the spirit of God, in the spirit of the ancestors, in the spirit of the Black Panthers, in the spirit of Asada Shakur, we make this movement towards freedom for all those who have been oppressed and all those in the struggle. Yeah, yeah, check it. There were lights and sirens, gunshots fine, cover your eyes as I describe a scene so violent, seemed like a bad dream. She laid in the blood puddle, blood bubbled in her chest, cold air brushed against open flesh, no room to rest, pain consumed these breaths, shot twice with her hands up, police questioned but shot before she answered. One Panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no harm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved the room to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her. Put the mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got killed, so they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer. But she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for the German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all. Awakened up, walkie-talkies crackling, not saying where they taking her. Though she kinda knew what made the ride peaceful was the trees and the sky was blue. Arrived to Middlesex prison about 6 in the morning, uneasy as they pushed her to the second floor in a cell. One cot, no window facing hell. Put in the basement of a prison with all males and the smell of misery, ceiling toilets and centipedes. She exercised paint and began to read. 2 years in a home, her soul grew weak. Away from people so long she forgot how to speak. She discovered freedom is an unspoken sound, and a wall is a wall and can be broken down. Found peace in the Panther she went on trial with. One of the brothers she had a child with, the foulness they would defeat her, hoping she'd lose her seed. Held tight knowing the fight would live through the sea. In need of a doctor, from her stomach she bleed. Out of this situation, a girl was to see. Separated from her, left to mother the revolution. And lactate to attack hate, cause federal estate was built for a black fate. Her emptiness was filled with beatings and court dates. They fabricated cases hoping one would stick. Instead, she robbed places that didn't exist. In the midst of threats on her life and being caged with Aryan whites. Through dark halls of hate, she carried the light. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. Yeah, I often wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. So dig it, people. Her grandmother would bring news that she had had a dream. Her dreams always meant what they needed them to mean. What made them real was the action in between. She dreamt that Asada was free in their own house in Queens. The fact that they always came true was the thing. Asada had been convicted of a murder she couldn't have done. Medical evidence shown she couldn't have shot the gun. It's time for her to see the sun from the other side. Time for a daughter to be by her mother's side. Time for this beautiful woman to become soft again. Time for her to breathe and not be told how or when. She untangled the chains and escaped the pain. How she broke
prison I could never explain. And even to this day, they try to get to her, but she's free with political asylum in Cuba.
About what freedom isn't and about what it is. Because I've never been free. I can only share my vision with you of the future, about what freedom is. The way I see it, freedom is the right to grow. It's the right to blossom. Freedom is the right to be yourself, to be who you are, to be who you want to be, to do what you want to do.
Hey, 3-4, sorry, a little dead here. That's 3-4-7.
Gave me the inner strength that I needed to overcome, or to be able to think about overcoming the tremendous odds that were against me, was my grandmother. She came from Wilmington, North Carolina, to see me at Yardville Prison. I was in that prison. I was put in a maximum security unit in a cell with two guards in front of the cell 24 hours a day, and a cell between two gun towers that could train their guns directly on the cell. I was told that I was in the Yardville unit for women, even though I was the only woman. And they tried to keep me there for the rest of my life. My grandmother came to visit me there to tell me a dream. And she came with all of my family, and everybody was happy, and I'm like, you know, what's happening with y'all? You're in this room. She had a dream. And I was like, okay. And so my grandmother's dream was that she was dressing me, that she was in an old house that she lived in when she lived in New York still. And she was putting clothes on me. I said, is that the dream? She said, that's the dream. And I said, well, was I little or big? She said, no, you were big. So I said, oh, my God, the only time people dress anybody when they're grown is when they're dead. And so she said, no, I know what you're thinking. No. What this dream means is that you are going to leave this prison. I don't know when, but it's going to be much less time than you've already spent here. And, you know, I didn't understand the dream, to be honest. It didn't make any sense to me. What does having wearing clothes have to do with getting out of prison? But My grandmother has always had dreams, and her dreams have always come true.
I don't know how my mother walked her trouble down. I don't know how my father stood his ground. I don't know how my people survived slavery. I do remember that's why I believe.
Many people say that injustice and hunger are walking freely all over the universe, and that nature is seeking a response. Asked the earth, where are the women worms? The earth responded, they have been scattered all over the world, but they can always be identified by the beauty in their eyes, which reflects the dignity and the greatness of the rainbow. Nevertheless, continued the earth, they suffer greatly, often much more than what is commonly endured by a human being. Why? Then the moon and the sun responded energetically. We have to look for them. We have to bring them together. Because it is only women warriors who know how to survive in the midst of so much suffering. Struggling.
I come from a tradition of women Maroons, Cimarrons, who didn't just try to escape from oppression, but were totally mind, body, spirit committed to resisting and committed to winning, whether it was Nanny in Jamaica, who fought against these enslavers, whether it was Harriet Tubman, who helped to free more than 700 slaves. I think I come from a very strong history, and I simply want to live on this planet and to continue that tradition and to try in my little way to make my ancestors proud. I want to live in a country where freedom means something.
To expect it. You know, I had these like crazy images because even though I considered myself a socialist, I considered myself someone who really identified with the Cuban Revolution, I had been raised on a diet of anti-communism. And so I came here, and I was like expecting, first of all, everybody to look like Fidel. I thought everybody was going to wear green fatigues and stuff. It was just like a crazy thing, and I thought people would be talking like the revolution. You know what I mean? I just had these crazy stereotypes, and then when I came, it was like, wow, a whole new world. The first thing that hit me was, just how beautiful the nature is here. You know, whether it's the sea, whether it's the plants. This is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life. Everything is so lush, so green, so ripe. And, just the climate made me immediately feel at home. I was very much impressed by the healthcare system, by the education system, by the sports teams, by all of the many things that the revolution has been able to accomplish. What has impressed me most has been how people live, just how people relate to each other. I mean, I come from a society that is literally at war with itself. I didn't even know how to react to people when I came here. People would just come off the street and start talking to me, and I would immediately get paranoid. What do they want? It was very difficult for me to realize, somebody would say, what time is it? Or where did you buy that? Because Cubans will come up to you and just talk to you, whether you were in a store or a line, and that was something very different, that human contact.
In Queens, New York, in Jamaica, Queens. And I stayed there until I was about 3 or something. And I went with my grandparents to live in Wilmington, North Carolina. My grandparents decided to go back to Wilmington because Wilmington was their home. And because also they wanted to open up a small business. They had saved all their money, hoping to go back to Wilmington, and they did go back, and they opened up a small business on the beach by the sea. They opened the business because at that time, Wilmington was completely segregated. Well, the South was just totally segregated. It was an apartheid. What that meant was that there were black schools. For example, I went to a all-black school, the Gregory School. There were the black library. We grew up with that kind of reality of not voluntarily living like that, not voluntarily accepting apartheid, but understanding that the price of stepping out and or standing up alone could possibly be death. And from slavery
the idea of a political prisoner started. We were political prisoners brought here from Africa. We were political prisoners in in order to keep colonialism fat, in order to keep the plantation owners that profited from our sweat and labor, we were kidnapped and brought here as prisoners, and our status hasn't changed, whether it's on the streets, we're prisoners of the ghettos, in Harlem, we're prisoners in small tenements, we're prisoners of urine, smelling hallways, and I mean, I've always been a prisoner. I've never been free in my life. I don't know what freedom means. Sitting in this place on this plantation, you know, you think back to what those slaves had to deal with, and that probably the only beauty that they saw was the human beauty between them and the beauty of the sky and of the trees and of the grass. And I think that probably helped them to survive, to stay alive, to stay alive internally, spiritually. Growing up, you know, by the sea and seeing the beauty of this planet, it was hard not to really have a profound respect for this planet, for nature. My grandmother, she could not stand people throwing paper on the floor. I mean, she could not take that. That was a crime for her, because what it meant, you know, she would say, look at these grown people, you know, what's wrong with their hands? They can't hold the paper until they find a trash can, you know. I think that how we live in this earth is very much tied to how we think about nature. And so I think that it's important for African people and all people who appreciate living to make sure that our children and our grandchildren have a planet that is livable. And that means to make very serious changes in the order of the priority and the politics that exist today.
Marido, marido, yeah, marido, puro, puro, me, yeah. Haribo time. Haribo, yeah. Haribo. Haribo time. Haribo, yeah. Haribo.
Being African is not a matter of race. It's a matter of a history, of a culture, of a struggle of a people. And the important thing is to be able to remember that, not to be disassociated from that, not to be torn from that, to carry that on into the future, and to carry that on in changing the future.
Because the projection is very different, how you are taught to think about Cuba in the U.S. media. So I was really shocked. And then I began to be exposed to the culture, and the culture is so rich, whether it's in dance, whether it's music. It's so African. There's the rhythm, there's the drums, you know. I began to be aware of just how much they had robbed us in the United States, because the slavery, the kind of slavery that existed here was terrible, and equally as terrible in the United States, but people were able to keep their religion, their gods, their heart, peace, language. They were able to maintain dances, rituals that were directly from Africa. And for the first time in my life, I became acquainted with the Orishas, with Yemaya, Shango, Obatala, and I felt like, wow, I was reclaiming just another piece that we was stolen from. Yabumagarere. Abaka,
Hero Diva Bagarere,
Yamina Karere, Ala Tariye,
Hero Diva Bagarere,
Moro Koro Komo Temero, Modena Yemo Motemata, Moro. Boba e na ye mata ke ya na yo.
they came under the guns of the FBI, as did all of the black liberation movement. It didn't matter what positions you took. It mattered that people related to those positions, that people understood what you were saying, that people supported you. And I think that when J. Edgar Hoover and those who control the United States government understood how many young people looked to the party for leadership, how many young people were inspired by the Black Panther Party, how many young people supported the activities of the Black Panther Party, and it was, you know, people, just ordinary street people, who people, working people, mothers, grandmothers, who would come to the office and bring clothes, come to the office and make donations. So the government just perceived us as a threat because they understood that we were serious, they understood we were telling the truth, and they understood also that we were becoming a much more sophisticated opposition. We were not just the piece of pie opposition, but that we wanted a real structural change in the United States. And so we took very clear positions. We opposed the United States government intervention in Vietnam. We opposed the blockade against Cuba and all of the other U.S. policies that were hostile to the Cuban Revolution. We opposed the United States policies of supporting apartheid in South Africa. We opposed all of the U.S. government's imperialist policies against all progressive people's struggles. By the 1960s, the late end of the 1960s, the black liberation movement became the main target of the counterintelligence program. And what they did was to try to neutralize all of our leaders, to prevent young people from coming together and uniting. And so what they did is try to pit organization against organization. They tried to pit leaders in the same organizations against each other. In New York, where I was, what they did was they arrested in, I think it was 1968, I'm not very clear on the date, or I don't remember it at this moment. They arrested, on charges of conspiracy, 21 of our most effective activists, of our most effective leaders. As a movement, have to concentrate a lot of our energies on trying to liberate our imprisoned comrades. Even though they were given bail, the bail was $100,000 apiece, and only a few of them we were able to bail out. I think that we cannot look at the Black Panther Party in the past. We cannot look at the Black Liberation Movement as something in the past. African people are still not free, and there are still many, many political prisoners in the United States. It is time for us to demand total, immediate amnesty for all political prisoners and prisoners of war. If we do not take ourselves seriously, if we do not take our movement seriously, then we will have to hang our heads in front of our ancestors.
Baba Otosi, Ayelo Da Omolode.
Otosi, Ayelo Da Omolode.
Baba Otosi, Omakelo Da Omolode.
Oh, God.
It was a hellish experience. No one was permitted to see me. My aunt, who is also my lawyer, Evelyn Williams, had to get a court order for her and my mother and my sister to come and see me. I was in prison altogether 6.5 years. I spent more than 2.5 years in solitary confinement. Much of that was in men's prisons. In other words, I was the only woman. Even though they say that there are no political prisoners in the United States, I was kept in solitary confinement, kept in men's prisons because of my political beliefs. So you figure that one out. What it was, prison. Prison was hell. It was a new kind of plantation.
I feel like a maroon woman. I feel like an escaped slave, because what I saw in the United States in those prisons was slavery. It was black people with chains in cells. It was just poor people, you know, I mean, just stepped on and smashed. I'll never forget what I saw. I'll never forget what I've lived through. I'll never forget what my people have lived through.
We started to, I don't know, to feel tender toward each other. We started to feel an attraction, to feel like human beings again, I guess is the word for it. And the subject of sex came up, and we thought about it, and we talked about it. And it was really heavy. It was a heavy, heavy thing because, you know, I didn't know how to feel. Because so much that was around us was like slavery, you know? I mean, it was like very clear they were out to wipe us out. And it was real. It wasn't any fantasy, wasn't any joke. They were out to take our heads. And, you know, I felt like a slave. I'm sure he must have felt just like a slave. And we said, well, how could we even think about bringing a child into this world? But then what other world is there to bring a child in? I mean, the world is a terrible place. And, you know, I thought about my mother, my grandmother, my great-great-great-grandmothers, and what they must have thought about as slaves, bringing life into this world. And, you know, we just decided that we were going to live, you know. We were going to live, we were going to struggle, and we're not going to kill our own hopes. We're not going to kill our own life. We're not going to kill our right to live. And so we just decided to be human beings, to be people. In spite of all the people that were trying to squash us down and all the forces that were trying to dehumanize us, we decided to be human. Call my grandmother, and I couldn't call her, you know, and say, I'm getting ready to escape. And so she said, I want to tell you something. Are you listening to me? Yes, grandmother. I don't want you to get used to that place. Don't get accustomed to that place. Do you hear me? Yes, grandmother. Are you sure you hear me? Yes, grandmother. I do not want you getting used to that place. Do you hear me? Yes, grandmother. And so when I hung up the phone, it wasn't like I saw it. It was like, you know, my grandmother knew. It was like everything was ready to go, and everything went, and everything went fine. That the only way that we're going to realize freedom, justice, equality, decent living for people is if there's a complete change. A complete change. Everything has got to be turned around, and that's the revolution, a complete change. Slavery, people went around looking for their family, looking for the marks that they put on their children. So I'm sure there's a lot about my family's separation and the pain that I don't know, were they in the coast of Africa or coast of some island in the Caribbean or in the United States. Separation is a real part of being African in the Americas, being slaves or ex-slaves. In my own case, prison has meant separation, exile has meant separation, and well, I'm gonna be real right now. I can't be any other way. Today, my mother died, and I didn't know if I could do this, but since I didn't have anything else to do, and I figured this was the best homage I could pay to my mother, is to try to carry on her tradition, what she passed down to me, what my grandmother passed down to her, and what their forefathers passed down to them. I hope that I can live up to my mother's example, and I hope I can live up to my ancestors' expectation of me, because I really believe that I have a duty to all those who have come before me, to all those who lie at the bottom of the ocean, to all those who lost their lives, whether it's in cane fields or cotton fields or, you know, hanging off some tree, to continue this struggle and to continue to love and to continue to believe and to continue to try to be human, to be giving, to be loving.
Asada by Common. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, we continue to look at the case of Asada Shakur, legendary figure within both the first the Black Panther Party and then the Black Liberation Army. On Thursday, she became the first woman ever to make the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. In addition, the FBI and the state of New Jersey doubled the reward for her capture to $2 million.
To talk about her case, we are joined by two people. Here in New York, Lennox Hines, Asada Shakur's longtime attorney. He's represented her since 1973. He's a professor of criminal justice at Rutgers University. And in Chicago, we're joined by the world-renowned author, activist, scholar Angela Davis, also a professor at University of California, Santa Cruz. And she is the subject of a recent film, Free Angela and All Political Prisoners. Angela Davis and Lennox Hines both wrote forewords to the book Asada, an autobiography. We invited the FBI to join us on today's program, but they did not respond to our request. I wanted to start with you, Lennox Hines. The significance of Asada Shakur being put on the FBI's terrorist list, the first woman ever to be added to the most wanted list.
My view on this is that this is a disingenuous act on the part of, driven by the state of New Jersey, and particularly the state police. As you know, for decades, the state police have wanted and demanded that the Cuban government extradite Asada Shakur to the United States. There is no extradition policy between Cuba and the United States. Just to deal with this in context, the Cuban government, pursuant to international law, that is particularly the Refugee Convention, have granted Asada Shakur political asylum. Now, what is the basis for that? It is, if an individual has a well-grounded fear that if they return to the country from which they left, they would either be persecuted or prosecuted based upon their political beliefs or and their race or religion. Now, this is not a new concept. There have been numerous individuals who have left the United States and went to foreign countries, allies of the United States, where those countries have refused to extradite them. France, for example, in the 1970s, there were Black Panthers who hijacked planes and went to France. Now, both France and the United States have extradition treaties. Not only that, France signed the 1963 Tokyo Convention, the 1970 Hague Convention, and the 1973 Montreal Convention with the United States. All of these are international agreements that that require countries, host countries that are holding individuals who have hijacked planes, to extradite them or try them. France, after conducting their own independent review of these Black Panthers, refused to extradite them to the United States based upon France's assessment that if they would be returned, they would be subject to political and racial repression. So I say that the Cubans' position is well grounded in international law. Now, why today is Assata Shakur now being branded a terrorist? If we look at the definition of terrorism, what is it? It is the use or the threat of use of force against the civilian population to achieve political ends. What happened in the case of Assata Shakur? You have heard in her own words, this woman was a political activist. She was targeted by whom? J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI in a program that was called COINTELPRO. That program was unveiled by whom? Frank Church, Senator Frank Church in the 1970s. He chaired the Senate Intelligence Committee. That committee determined that the FBI was using both legal but mostly illegal methods to do what? In the FBI's own words, they wanted to discredit, to stop the rise of a black messiah. That was the fear of the FBI, so that there would not be a Mau Mau, in their words, uprising in the United States. And they were, of course, referring to the liberation movement that occurred in Kenya, Africa. Now, the FBI carried out a campaign where targeting not only the Black Panther Party. They targeted SCLC. They targeted Martin Luther King. They targeted Harry Belafonte. They targeted Eartha Kitt. They targeted anyone who supported the struggle for civil rights that they considered to be dangerous. It is in that context we need to look at what happened on the New Jersey Turnpike in 1973. What they call Joanne Chesimard, what we know as Assata Shakur, she was targeted by the FBI, stopped. And the allegation that she was a cold-blooded killer is not supported by any of the forensic evidence. If we look at the trial, we'll find that she was victimized. She was shot. She was shot in the back. The bullet exited and broke the clavicle in her shoulder. She could not raise a gun. She could not raise her hand to shoot. And she was shot while her hands were in the air. Now, that is the forensic evidence. There is not one scintilla of evidence placing a gun in her hand. No arsenic residue was found on her clothing or on her hands. So the allegation by the state police that she took an officer's gun and shot him, executed him in cold blood, is not only false, But it is designed to inflame.
But Ms. Hines, before we get into more of the details of the case, this whole issue of 40 years later, suddenly branding her a terrorist, and also insisting that she is a threat to the United States government at this time. Can you talk about the significance of that declaration?
Well, I believe that we have to look at it in the context of what has just happened in Boston. I think that with the massacre that occurred there, the FBI and the state police are attempting to inflame the public opinion to characterize her as a terrorist, because the acts that she was convicted of has nothing to do with terrorism. The acts that she was convicted of, if you look at the evidence, she was convicted of aiding and abetting and therefore was present during the shootout. The FBI and the state police's theory was that Sundiata Okoli shot Officer Foster. That was their theory during his trial.
One of the people in the car with her.
Let me read the FBI press release, and you can respond to how they describe it. And we want to bring Angela Davis in as well. This was their press release yesterday describing the May 2nd, 1973 shooting. They said, on May 2nd, 1973, Chesimard and a pair of accomplices were stopped by two troopers for a motor vehicle violation on the New Jersey Turnpike. At the time, Chesimard, a member of the Violent Revolutionary Activist Organization known as the Black Liberation Army, was wanted for involvement in several felonies, including bank robbery. Chesimard and her accomplices opened fire on the troopers. One officer was wounded. His partner, Trooper Forster, was shot and killed at point-blank range. One of Chesimard's accomplices was killed in the shootout. The other was arrested and remains in jail. Chesimard fled but was apprehended. That's their statement yesterday.
Right. Also in this statement that I read, the superintendent of state police claimed that Asada Shakur took the officer Foster's weapon and shot him while he was on the ground. There is not one scintilla of evidence at the trial attesting to that. In fact, as I was saying before, she was incapable of lifting her hands, much less firing a weapon. Now, you ask, what is the reason for this allegation at this time? We have to remember that 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, the then governor of the state of New Jersey, former governor, Christie Roth Whitman, she had issued and posted a $1 million bounty for Asada Shakur. Today it has been doubled. But we believe that putting Asada Shakur on the FBI's 10 most wanted list is designed to inflame the public and to characterize her as a terrorist, when none of the acts alleged relates to terrorism. In fact, of all of the charges that have been leveled against her in New York, case after case, she was acquitted or the charges were dismissed. There was insufficient evidence to support any of the charges.
Well, let's just, in 1971, armed robbery case was dismissed. 1971, she was acquitted of bank robbery. 1972, hung jury. 1972, kidnap of drug dealer, acquitted. And then several other cases dismissed. Angela Davis, you're in Chicago right now to give a major address tonight at the University of Chicago. Can you talk about this news of Joanne Chesimard, Asada Shakur, being put on the top 10 wanted terrorist list, the first woman ever to be put on this list?
Well, first of all, it was a major shock to hear that Asada Shakur has become the first woman to be added to the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. And then to learn that they're adding another $1 million to the reward, the bounty, really, it seems to me that this act incorporates or reflects the very logic of terrorism. I can't help but think that it's designed to frighten people who are involved in struggles today. 40 years ago seems as if it were a long time ago, four decades. However, in the 21st century, at the beginning of the 21st century, we're still fighting around the very same issues, police violence, healthcare, education, people in prison, and so forth. So I see this as an attack not so much on Asata herself, although, of course, she deserves to be brought home. She deserves to be able to live out her life in with justice and peace. It was wonderful that you allowed people through this program to hear Asata's words, because 40 years later, people really don't know the details of the case, and I'm not aware of the extent to which she was targeted by the FBI, by the COINTEL program, as Lennox pointed out. And it's amazing that in 2013, where she is living in Cuba as a political refugee, having been given political asylum by Cuba, she is still pursued. And actually, this is an invitation for anyone to travel to Cuba illegally and to kidnap her and bring her back to the United States, if not shoot her dead. This is, as I said, was an extremely shocking revelation.
And Angela Davis, the government statement that she remains a threat to the United States, the implication being that she's somehow still trying to organize attacks on the country. It really is mind-boggling. It's one thing to say we have a case here of someone who's still wanted. It's another thing to say that they're still a threat to the United States when there's been no indication over the last 30, 40 years that Asada Shakur has been involved in any type of movements or organizations directed against the United States government.
Well, see, there's always this slippage between what should be protected free speech, that is to say, the advocacy of revolution, the advocacy of radical change, and what the FBI represents as terrorism. You know, certainly Asata continues to advocate radical transformation of this country, as many of us do. You know, I continue to say that we need revolutionary change. This is why it seems to me that the attack on her reflects the logic of terrorism, because it precisely is designed to frighten young people, especially today, who would be involved in the kind of radical activism that might lead to change. But you're absolutely right. Asada is not a threat. If anything, this is a vendetta. She is innocent, and many of us have looked at the evidence, and as Lennox pointed out, there's no way that she could have possibly been the person who killed Forster, because she had her hands up and was shot in the back with her hands in the air, and could not have used a gun at that time. And so to represent her as a person who continues to be a threat to the U.S. government in the way that is described is it seems to me, an effort to strike fear in the hearts of young people who would be active in the struggles that are represented historically by Asata, and struggles that continue today, struggles against police violence, for example. Consider the fact that so many people have been killed by the police in recent years. And I'm thinking about Kimani Gray in New York. I'm thinking about Alan Bluford in Oakland. I'm, of course, Oscar Grant in Oakland. I'm thinking about the 63 people who were killed last year in Chicago by the Chicago police.
Lennox Hines, this issue of what this allows the U.S. government to do, to be on the most wanted terrorist list, I mean, does this mean the government could move in like they moved in on Osama bin Laden, for example?
I think what Angela said was right on point. It is an open invitation, not only with respect to the United States government, but for anyone in Cuba or elsewhere to become a vigilante, to go there and to not only apprehend and bring her back, or to kill her. So it's an open invitation. And, you know, when we... Cuba is accused of harboring terrorists. And when we look at the role of the United States and the United States government vis-a-vis Cuba, the United States government and the CIA have encouraged, trained, sent individuals to not only disrupt the Cuban economy by killing tourists, placing bombs in restaurants and hotels, but to assassinate Fidel Castro. And individuals who admitted that they were involved in the downing of a Cuban airliner in 1973. I'm talking about Posada Corrales. Here was a man who made the open admission, trained by the CIA, harbored by the United States. When he was found in the United States, did the United States prosecute him for those crimes? No. They on a pretext, prosecuted him for lying through the FBI, all right, and acquitted him of that.
I wanted to go back to Assata Shakur when she was here, when she was imprisoned. This is a clip of a documentary, Eyes on the Rainbow, the Assata Shakur documentary. In this, Assata Shakur talks about her experience in prison.
Prisons are big business in the United States, and the building, running, and supplying of prisons has become the fastest-growing industry in the country. Factories are moving into the prisons, and prisoners are forced to work for slave wages. This super exploitation of human beings has meant the institutionalization of a new form of slavery. Those who cannot find work on the streets are forced to work in prison.
That was Assata Shakur in the film Eyes on the Rainbow, the Assata Shakur documentary. Lennox Hines, you went to court to change the prison conditions that Assata Shakur was in after she was arrested. Describe what happened to her after she was arrested. I mean, she was near death.
She was near death. She was chained to her hospital bed after she recovered. She was placed in an all-male prison. She was under 24-hour surveillance by male prison guards who were watching and monitoring her very personal needs during that time period. We went into federal court and challenged the conditions of her confinement, where she was kept in solitary confinement for 2 years. We won that case, and the Middlesex County Correctional Department were forced to place her in a woman's facility. But that was a horrible situation, amounting to torture.
Your case went to the Supreme Court, how you were treated in the court?
Well, there's the illusion. I wrote a book called Illusions of Justice. There is the illusion that we have justice in the United States. I made the mistake of thinking that lawyers enjoy the First Amendment right. And I called a press conference and I criticized the trial judge at the trial and said that the case was a legalized lynching. And before you know it, I was facing disbarment. They attempted to disbar me by bringing charges against me. And they asked me to come and explain myself. I refused. I sued the judge. I sued the prosecutor. And I sued all of the members of the ethics committee, forced them to come to my office. I took their depositions. And the case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. United States Supreme Court said, well, Hines could not have understood the seriousness of the charges. Otherwise, he would not have made that sort of statement. They sent the case back to New Jersey. The New Jersey Supreme Court agreed and tossed it out.
You're still a lawyer today. And
I'm still a lawyer
today.
And you
represented South African President Nelson Mandela.
That's correct. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the trial itself, the only trial for which Assata Shakur has ever been convicted in New Jersey. You write in the preface, it had been and is my view that it was the racism in Middlesex County fueled by biased, inflammatory publicity in the local press before and throughout the trial, fanned by the documented government lawlessness that made it possible for the white jury to convict Assata on the uncorroborated, contradictory, and generally incredible testimony of Trooper Harper, the only other witness to the events on the turnpike. There was one other state trooper, Harper, who survived the confrontation and who was the main witness against Assata.
Yeah, but Harper ran away during the shootout, came back, and his story was conflicted and contradictory. And
he originally claimed that he had seen her pull out a gun.
That's right, but there was no evidence to support that. Right. As I said, no fingerprints on any weapon. They claimed that she fired a weapon. There were no arsenic powder marks or residue on her clothing or on her hands, etc. No forensic evidence.
And he later also admitted that the original reports and testimony they had given was wrong.
Was wrong, that's right.
And yet she was still convicted.
Yes, she was convicted, and it was an all-white jury. The pretrial publicity was such that people in Middlesex County and people from the northern part of New Jersey believed then and believe now that she is guilty. The mere fact that she was in the car meant that she was guilty. And in fact, the instructions to the jury, because there was no evidence of her doing any shooting, the instructions to the jury was that if you find that she was present and supported the action of the people who did the shooting, she can be found guilty as a principal. And that is under the felony murder rule.
Now, Angela Davis, I wanted to go to your own case years ago because it's coming up with a new film, your own history. I wanted to play a trailer to the new documentary, Free Angela and All Political Prisoners.
Professor Angela Davis admitted that she is a member of the Communist Party.
Who put her on the top 10? Everybody had a file on her.
Her first lecture drew 2,000 students.
Angela's education is now being put into practice.
Angela Davis purchased 4 guns.
It's a conspiracy in the land. It's a conspiracy to wipe out the black community as a whole.
Well, I think she's trying to overthrow our system of government, and she admits that.
The actions of the FBI in apprehending Angela Davis, a rather remarkable story.
A U.S. District Court judge set bail at $100,000.
That the movement to free all political prisoners is growing every day.
This entire incident was a deliberate provocation.
They wanted to break me. They wanted me to respond.
There was enormous feeling for Angela everywhere in the world.
We know that she is innocent.
We want to tell that Pharaoh in Washington to let Angela Davis go free.
What they're doing to her is an exaggerated form of what happens every day to black people in this country.
Be a criminal in this society.
They are not going to kill her.
they're not going to imprison her. We're going to free her. We're going to win her freedom.
You've been listening to an excerpt of a trailer, Free Angela and All Political Prisoners, that has just been finished. Quite an interesting film by Shola Lynch. Angela Davis, if you could share your own experience that you went through, it was right about the same time that Assata Shakur was going through what she was.
Well, yes, it was, and I find it really interesting that the FBI decided to focus quite specifically on black women, because somehow they feared, it seems to me, that the movement would continue to grow and develop, particularly with the leadership and the involvement of black women. Rendered a target, an ideological target, in the same way that Assata Shakur was called the mother hen of the Black Liberation Army. The way in which she was represented became an invitation for racists and everyone who assented to the repressive behavior of the U.S. government to focus very specifically on her, to focus their hate, to focus vendettas on her. And I really find it surprising that when the grandchildren of those who were active in the late 60s and early 70s are becoming involved in similar movements today, there is this effort to again terrorize young people by representing such an important figure as Assata Shakur as a terrorist. And let me say that I was quite surprised that in the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombing, where before the Cernev brothers were discovered to be the alleged perpetrators, there was an attempt to represent the person who planted the bombs as either a black man or a dark-skinned man with a hoodie, I believe. This racialization of what is represented as terrorism is an attempt to bring the old-style racism into conversation with modes of repression in the 21st century. And there's one other point that I would like to make, and that is that at the same time that Assata Shakur is being designated the first woman ever on the 10 most wanted terrorist list, the Cuban citizens who attempted to prevent terrorist attacks on Cuba continue to be held in prison in the United States.
Lennox, I'd like to ask you about this whole issue of the FBI and COINTELPRO that you mentioned earlier on, the role that the FBI has historically played in terms of persecution of black activists and revolutionaries, beginning obviously with an incident that shaped Assata Shakur's thinking, the murder of Fred Hampton. And when you talk about people who, or everyone who was involved in an incident, there were many FBI and Chicago police folks involved in the murder of Fred Hampton.
No,
you talk
about
that?
No question. There were literally hundreds of victims of the FBI COINTELPRO program. These are individuals who were killed, assassinated. The instructions that were given by the FBI to not only their field agents, but also to the local police, it was essentially shoot on sight. And the case of Fred Hampton was a clear case where, the investigations that were conducted showed that of the dozens of bullets that were fired, at least 40 bullets that were fired, only one, if that many, were fired by the Panthers who were in the house.
And of course, Fred Hampton was the head of the Black Panther Party in Chicago. He in bed, he and Mark Clark killed on December 4th, 1969.
They were killed. Fred Hampton was in bed, and he was shot while lying in bed. And so, again, the victims of the counterintelligence program were individuals who were not only falsely accused, falsely arrested, but many of them were assassinated.
Finally, you are Assata Shakur's lawyer. Is there anything you can do as a lawyer right now with her being named to the terrorism list? Is there any way to appeal this?
No, there is no way to appeal someone being put on the terrorist list. This is a political act. And this is an act that has been done by being pushed by the state of New Jersey, by some members of Congress from Miami, and with the intent of putting pressure on the Cuban government and to inflame public opinion.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Lennox Hines, Assata Shakur's attorney. He's represented her since 1973, professor of criminal justice at Rutgers University. He also represented Nelson Mandela in the United States. And Angela Davis, joining us from Chicago, author, professor, and activist, professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, joining us from Chicago. Thanks so much for watching this report from Democracy Now!, your daily independent global news hour. We don't accept advertising or corporate funding, but rather rely on donations from viewers like you. Please make your contribution by visiting democracynow.org. We need your support today to keep bringing you this hard-hitting, in-depth reporting.
In the spirit of God, in the spirit of the ancestors, in the spirit of the Black Panthers, in the spirit of Assata Shakur, we make this movement towards freedom for all those who have been oppressed and all those in the struggle. Yeah, yeah, check it. There were lights and sirens, gunshots fine, cover your eyes as I describe a scene so violent, seemed like a bad dream. She laid in the blood puddle, blood bubbled in her chest, cold air brushed against open flesh, no room to rest. Pain consumed these breaths, shot twice with her hands up, police questioned but shot before she answered. One panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no arm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved the room to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her. Put mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got chills, so they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer. But she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for the German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all. Waking up, walkie-talkies crackling, not saying where they taking us. Though she kinda knew what made the ride peaceful was the trees and the sky was blue. Arrived to Middlesex prison about 6 in the morning. Uneasy as they pushed her to the second floor in a cell. One cot, no window, face to hell. Put in the basement of a prison with all males and the smell of misery. Ceiling toilets and centipedes. She exercised, paint, and began to read. 2 years in the home, her soul grew weak. Away from people so long, she forgot how to speak. She discovered freedom is an unspoken sound. And a wall is a wall and can be broken down. Found peace in the panther she went on trial with. One of the brothers, she had a child with the foulness. They wouldn't feed her, hoping she'd lose.
just see. Held tight knowing the fight would live through the sea. In need of a doctor from her stomach she bleeds. Out of this situation, a girl was in need. Separated from her, left to mother the revolution. And lactate to attack hate. Cause federal estate was built for a black fate. Her emptiness was filled with beatings and court dates. They fabricated cases hoping one would stick. And said she robbed places that didn't exist. In the midst of threats on her life and being caged with Aryan white. Through dark halls of hate, she carried the light. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free. Yeah, I often wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free from digging deep. Her grandmother would bring news that she had had a dream. Her dreams always meant what they needed them to mean. What made them real was the action in between. She dreamt that her side was free in their own house in Queens. The fact that they always came true was the theme. Her side had been convicted of a murder she couldn't have done. Medical evidence shown she couldn't have shot the gun. It's time for her to see the sun from the other side. Time for a daughter to be by her mother's side. Time for this beautiful woman to become soft again. Time for her to breathe and not be told how or when. She untangled the chains and escaped the pain. How she broke out of prison I could never explain. And even to this day, they try to get to her. But she's free with political asylum in Cuba.
I've never been free. I can only share my vision with you of the future, about what freedom is. The way I see it, freedom is the right to grow. It's the right to blossom. Freedom is the right to be yourself, to be who you are, to be who you want to be.
Yo, I like y'all. Thank y'all for listening to my little, tribute to Assata Shakur. You have to make up your own mind on the situation. You can look it up, follow the court case or what have you. But it's funny that here in the Obama administration that a black woman will be considered America's number one terrorist suspect. Ain't that about something? But we can deal with it, want to deal with it. You can check on Eyes on the Rainbow, which I played earlier. And check out the little documentary on Assata Shakur. Hey, I'll see y'all tomorrow. Good night, and may y'all God be with you. Always, everybody. Your mom.